Hello and welcome to this episode of Into the Cage. I'm your host, Logan Mock. This is the segment, of course, where guests get to talk about Nicolas Cage movies without me rambling on for 20 to 30 minutes. Today, I was joined by special guest Anthony Hayes, and we talked about one of his favorite movies, Deadfall. And it's the best kind of movie because even fans, such as himself, know how bad it is. So we talk about all sorts of stuff on there, including a very surprising friend of his. Look out for that one. So after an ad break, we'll get right into the interview. And welcome back to Into the Cage. I'm Logan Mock, and today I am joined by my special guest today, Anthony. Anthony, why don't you tell them a bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Anthony Hoyes. I am a musician and a record label owner. And, I say it's a great movie. I say it's, it's definitely worth watching, but it is god-awful. It's got a plot that makes no sense. It's got cinematography that doesn't make any sense. If you like, a nice linear story, you're not really going to get that so much with this movie. I don't know if that's just an issue with the editing or what the issue was, but the story kind of falls apart a little bit before the middle. Then after that, it just goes downhill, but not necessarily in a bad way. It's entertaining.
Yeah,
but it's not one for quality cinema.
Yeah, I think that is exactly a best description for that. So there's a few things I want to talk about the movie, about why it may have been bad. One of the things I think is Nicolas Cage's wig and nose in this movie. So in the movie, he has a very obvious wig and a very large protruding nose. Why do you think that they chose to go with that?
I think the whole purpose of his character, Eddie, is I think he is definitely the comic relief in the movie, but It's not meant to be a comedy, obviously.
But
it's one of those things where you need something, and you need something so ridiculous to go along with the ridiculous story you're getting that you don't really question the ridiculous story. And Nicolas Cage's portion of the movie, you don't really question what's going on with him because he's so over the top that I'm sure we'll get to it, but in one of the scenes, he's in the strip club, he's just randomly drinking, he's screaming. He attacks this guy for no reason. Then he takes him out in the parking lot, and he slits the guy's throat, and nothing really, it's definitely on his way down into dementia, but nothing really comes of him doing that. And you don't really question why it's happening because it's just, part of his character. And yeah. I think they have to dress him up like that to make him look in a one. It's a film noir kind of movie, and I guess they have to have that typical film noir character. Very clear-cut bad guy in this, but not really a bad guy. Just they call him a hothead. He's on drugs. He's definitely let the drugs take hold of him. But I think that's why they had to dress him up is for the just the character, and then to sort of hide elements of the story is what I would have to guess on that.
Yeah, his acting, I think, is not the worst it's been. He's definitely had some worse acting roles. He definitely goes over the top in a lot of scenes. Do you think that sort of, pushing the boundaries, sort of insane? Do you think that works for this character? Do you think that works in this movie?
It works in the movie in terms of, I guess even with the sort of sequel, if you want to get into that a little bit, but the sort of, obviously that's a big time difference in the two movies. But it's one of those things where the sequel, obviously the first one is standalone, it makes sense. It makes him sort of gives his character an edge, gives a reason for, you know, Michael Biehn to be focused on that instead of going towards his goal of the uncle. It gives him, you know, then the love interest that comes into play. I mean, all that is you know, gaming. I'm a big gamer, so those are side missions. Those are side quests. So you do that, but it keeps you entertained. It keeps you not really guessing the story. You know, you're just sort of watching and thinking to yourself as he's, and again, I agree with you, his acting is not bad in the movie. It's very good, I think, but it's good to a point where it's way overdone and over the top, but I think it has to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about the sequel of sorts real quick. So I talked about this one as well. The movie Arsenal, that was released much more recently. And at first glance, it has absolutely nothing to do with this movie. Completely different locations, completely different characters, except that Nicolas Cage plays Eddie King, who he plays in Deadfall. And normally, that wouldn't be any big thing, except the fact that Nicolas Cage dies in both movies.
Yes. Well, and my question on that was, I never really thought he was dead in the first one. Obviously he, you know, spoiler alert for people who haven't seen it, but that's the point of this. You know, Michael Biehn puts his face and head basically into a deep fryer for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. He comes out with severe burns over him. He falls to the ground. I don't think that's enough to kill a man. I mean, it doesn't show much else after that.
Yeah.
And then obviously again, that was early 90s. So burn technology, probably not the greatest, but here we are. Late, you know, or I guess mid 2020 or 2000s, it's, you know, what was that, 2017, 18, I think it came out?
I think so, yeah, 17.
So, I mean, you can reasonably assume that in that time period, there's been something. It doesn't show any scars. I was looking real intently at that, but, I mean, I guess you could realistically connect the two characters, but, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Okay. Yeah. I did mention in my review of Deadfall that I had a theory that because he got burned and everything, if he didn't die, that the reason in Arsenal his nose and wig look much more fake is because they're covering some burn stuff.
I agreed with that as well.
Yeah, but I didn't want to give that movie too much credit. Arsenal definitely was much, in my opinion, much worse than this one.
Far worse.
Yeah. So let's talk about Michael Biehn. Mentioned him a bit. He's the star in this one. I should have prepared what his character's name was. I don't know it off the top of my head.
It was Joe. I didn't catch his last name.
Joe. This is not his only Nicolas Cage collaboration. He was also a sergeant or lieutenant of some sort in The Rock when they were storming Alcatraz.
That's right.
And I don't, all respect to him, he's not the best of actors.
Correct.
In Deadfall, I think he did a passable job. He seemed like the cool, collected person. In The Rock, he seemed a bit more over the top than perhaps he needed to be. But I think overall, he's an okay actor.
I would agree. Great in Tombstone. Mm-hmm. Great in his early work with, obviously, you know him from Aliens.
Yep.
In that great stuff with Bill Paxton. They were good friends. Much like yourself, I've found myself with a lot of extra time, and I watch a lot of movies, so kind of a good pairing here, maybe.
Yeah. Now, Anthony, today you wanted to talk about a specific movie of Nicolas Cage's. You wanted to talk about Deadfall.
For sure.
Why don't you say why you chose Deadfall in particular?
All right. Well, I first saw Deadfall probably in 1993, 94. So I would have been roughly 11, 12 years old. My father used to do this fun thing where he would rent really god-awful films. And then he would fall asleep during them, and he'd rent them like 8 or 9 different times. So I had to watch Deadfall a lot as a child. And I just learned to, I mean, as a kid, it was ridiculous, of course, but I learned to really appreciate the movie as I got older. And it stuck with me as one of my favorite Nick Cage films.
Nice. Now, I did review this one before, and I did give it a fairly low rating. Would you agree? Well,
he did a lot of really early stuff. Terminator, obviously, James Cameron. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of really good early stuff, and I think he got into a phase, possibly, where he was coasting a bit. And also, these movies, we're looking at them sort of as what they are today as opposed to what they were supposed to be. And a lot of these movies he were in were, you know, they're kind of shit shows. So,
yeah.
And, you know, he's a buddy of mine, so I'm defending him a bit. But he's, you know, I think he did what he thought he needed to do for the time, and then the movies ended up being good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's possibly what it is, because he's still acting today. He is doing his own films now, a lot of them. And they're all really early level acting stuff, really intense stuff, over the top still, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there has to be some of those guys who do that, and he's one of those guys that can do it well.
Yeah, and I haven't seen his newer stuff, but I've seen The Aliens, The Terminator. And I think of the time, it was probably more, it was more acceptable. Like, that was the role of the time. And perhaps hasn't aged as well, but I'll need to look at some of his newer stuff to see if that's true.
There's a good movie he did. He directed it. It's called The Victim. He and his wife did it. Very good movie.
And speaking of Michael Biehn, you said that you were friends with him. So how did that come about? How did you first meet him?
I'm a musician, so one time I was playing down in L.A. In a place called The Rainbow. It's a pretty famous bar, music scene, just industry people hang out there a lot. He happened to be there when I was performing. I met him there. I actually mentioned that I loved Deadfall, and I loved him in Tombstone, and he had a chuckle at the Deadfall comment. And it just sort of went from there. I met his wife. She's a very cool person. I met them probably 2011, and then he was doing his other movie, The Victim. I think that came out in like 2013, around there. So they were in the process of raising money for that, and that's how I met him, and I got involved with him sort of like that. And just over the years, we've talked. Again, his wife, Jennifer, very cool lady. He's a very cool guy, very laid back. Doesn't view celebrity the way that you might think he would. And it's all kind of very, very laid back, very, you know, kind of laughable to him. But, and he's also from, originally he's from Arizona. That's where I live right now as well. I ended up meeting a lot of people in his family. They've got a place, up north of here a little bit. I'm in Phoenix. They're in, like the Flagstaff Prescott area up north. So they've got a place up there they go to. And want to say that's also where The Victim was filmed at, was in Prescott area. So, just there's a lot of connections. We ended up talking about that. And, you know, he's, again, a very nice guy, very down to earth. Very, I guess, normal when you talk to people. He's just a normal guy.
Very cool.
By the way, real quick, I do know Nicolas Cage as well. Don't know him well. I met him a couple times. I met him through his son. His son's in a black metal band, and that's how I ended up meeting him.
That's right.
Very funny character when I met him. He was, you know, he was himself, but he was meeting people, so I'm assuming he's over the top when he's even himself even. So he's exactly how you would imagine he acts.
Wow. I think Yeah, you're the first person I've interviewed who's actually met Nicolas Cage. That's really cool. As you said before, he's a very comic relief character in this one. And I would say that as a comic relief character, you kind of need to be a minor side character, which is why I think his performance in this one was better than when he was the main bad guy in Arsenal.
Yes.
Like, he's better in smaller chunks.
When you act the way he acts in this one, absolutely. If the whole movie was like that, you would totally question the plot and everything else. Like, what the, you know, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. But with him, like you said it perfectly, small chunks, acting that way is perfect for, you know, this kind of role for him.
So, in this movie, there's a lot of interesting scenes. There's a lot of interesting choices that went on. Which were your favorites? Like, what was the, not necessarily the best one, what was the one that stuck with you the most?
There's so many for this one, it's hard to pick just one, but I'd say earlier the strip club scene I mentioned, you know, he's drinking, he gets confronted by somebody, kind of pisses him off, he starts shouting, he punches this guy on the way out, yells, "Hi, fucking ya," karate chops him in the throat, leaves the bar, he gets attacked, he starts fighting in the alley, asks the guy who sent him, because earlier he was screaming about Sam Peckinpah when he was in the strip club, and so the guy tells him Sam Peckinpah, he slits the guy's throat and just drives off. You know, from there he goes to his house, starts yelling at his girlfriend, just total over the top nonsense the whole time. I think it's great. It really adds to, frankly, the story. Like I said before, it's not the best. The acting's not the best in it. Mm-hmm. You can kind of hope and sit there and say, oh, this is cool if they could actually execute the story, but they couldn't execute it right. And at that point in the movie, you're really starting to not question it, but it's becoming obvious because you've wasted a good hour in the movie now.
Yeah.
And there's so much nonsense going on, and then he just really brings it up with this performance. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's watchable to the point that it is. You can watch the movie several times because you can always just count on that hilarity. But yeah. Also, I mean, again, it's not supposed to be funny, so I shouldn't keep saying hilarity, but it's very intense, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Very character driven. I mean, he at that time he was definitely a character actor, so who knows what sort of nonsense he was doing to get ready for that role. And I like to think about that quite a bit. Just the whole thing, pretty much every scene he's in is hilarious and intense. And if you want to look at it kind of sad, if you, you know, want to look at character development and just sort of see his character for what it is. I mean, he's basically a loser, drug addict. Girlfriend clearly doesn't care anything about him. He's in, from what you can tell, the only part of crime that it shows in the beginning there, a really obvious, like, low-level crime organization.
Yeah.
And then it goes from that to now they're doing $2 million deals, and he was supposed to be – I understand why he died in the movie or went away in the movie. Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense to get him out of the way and to sort of move the story along perfect. That's the other thing with him overreacting is you can sort of see why they needed to get rid of him in the overall plot of things.
Yeah. So that reminded me about the plot. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's very intricate. It's very convoluted.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, Michael Biehn's father dies, and then his twin brother is over in, like, some other state, but then his father didn't die, really. Like, an entire police force was involved in faking his death.
The whole thing was a very elaborate con. The father and uncle are both twins, so I guess that's supposed to be a shock, but they give it away pretty much right in the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a shock, it's just a little confusing in a way, but I guess the whole point, again, of the plot is to confuse Joe, Michael Biehn's character, to get him to play this elaborate game. He doesn't know what's going on, but yeah, the father dies in a con. Michael Biehn thinks he killed him. There was fake police officers that rush in and get them out of there. They have a funeral for him. He gets his dad's will and he sees something about his uncle. He goes to see his uncle and he finds out at that point they're twins. And that's when he meets Nicolas Cage and sees all this nonsense. Great cast for the movie, James Coburn, great actor. But again, even he is way over the top in both of the roles he plays.
Yeah.
Both of the times he dies, hilarious the way he acts. His death scenes are great. But yeah, I mean, the plot is nonsensical, but it tells a story that could be good. But like I said, they just have to execute it right. And for that period of time, early 90s, they were trying to do those kind of movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nick Cage's brother, Christopher Coppola, directed the film. Yeah. He's not a good director.
I agree with that.
Nothing he's ever done has been good that I can recall. And I think he also wrote the story, if I'm not mistaken. And
so,
very talented people, the Coppola family, but you know, their strong suit definitely is not film noir serious.
Yeah,
unless you're talking about Francis Ford, then that's different.
Yeah, I would say that there is a strong divide between the style of Francis Coppola and Nicholas and Christopher Coppola. I think they're two very different styles there.
Yeah, a little bit.
And you mentioned that with a few, it has a good plot idea. It could be a good story. It's got
a good story, yeah. Good story, good plot, I guess. Just a really, really convoluted, you said it best, their way of getting to the point. And then the story itself wouldn't have taken that long, and that's why you needed the over-the-top side mission, you know, interactions with Eddie and the girlfriend, and sort of, I guess, as mystery unfolds, you sort of start seeing what's happening. But then the, you know, the ending where the father reveals that he's still alive, that's, I guess, the twist. And that does come off as a twist because you don't see him as being, you know, a con, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
So that part works. It's just there could have been a lot more selling on Biehn's character's point of view of, you know, I see my father for the first time. He's revealed himself. My uncle's just died. He doesn't seem all that upset or shocked. He just kind of goes, you know, hand over the mouth type thing, and then that's about it.
Yeah.
But this is, I don't even know how much time has passed in the movie from the time he dies to when this final caper is, but, you know, it's at the minimum a few weeks have gone by, so you'd think there'd be more shock seeing your dead father come back.
Mm-hmm.
But, so yeah, the plot, not the greatest, but a very good story.
So, with the good story, what would you change? If you could have any say in what went on, what would you change about the movie to make it better?
There would be more interaction with the Charlie Sheen character because he has a very small character in this where he's a billiards expert who sets up the big con that they're pulling at the end. He plays a game, or Michael Biehn plays a game of billiards with him. He intentionally loses a bunch of money to him. So he has to show this watch to a jeweler that's convenient in the back of this billiards hall. The jeweler has a hook hand or a claw hand, and he's really the guy who's in charge of Charlie Sheen, so it makes no sense for Charlie Sheen to then send this guy to verify a jewel he's giving him. So none of that plot makes sense. So I'd really like more development of that side of it and what the plot would have been. they mentioned this character where they got the idea from, who died of like a heart attack. I understand not showing anything of him, but it would have been good to sort of explain how, you know, I guess the con itself got set up, because they just sort of jump right into it. You see all this nonsense. He, you know, kills Nicolas Cage. His uncle then springs this new con out of the blue, which is the same con that he just thinks he killed his father with, essentially. Mm-hmm. Where they do a double cross or a fake double cross. He has to shoot him with blanks. But then, you know, he's terrified because he thinks he just killed his father with the same thing. But he just goes into it no question. And there's never any kind of hesitation or any kind of, like, dealing with the facts of reality that's just happened. Yeah. It's just boom, 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 and then it makes no sense. So, mm-hmm. you know, it would have been nice to sort of tell the story a little more, you know, strengthen up the plot a little more. But in terms of, you know, changing too much about it, I wouldn't have changed a whole lot other than add a little more context to it. And then, mm-hmm. you know, again, the editing, again, got awful. It jumps around so much. It doesn't make the story linear. So, I mean, that would have been nice to have a little more understanding of the basic, you know, the main story that you're trying to hook people with. But,
yeah,
I guess it could work the way it was done. Just, you know, it's going to work in a less than B-movie quality way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I vaguely remembered there being a man with like a claw hand, but I thought I made that up completely because it seems like it was from a Bond movie. Like I remember, like I thought it was from like some James Bond movie that I saw, but yeah, he just has a claw hand. And yeah, there's definitely a lot of things I could have fleshed out more, like the Charlie Sheen character, like that whole plot. And there's definitely a lot of stuff they could have cut.
Did you ever see The Usual Suspects?
I haven't, no.
Okay, well, I don't want to spoil it for you then, but there's a plot in The Usual Suspects where they do a deal where they think there's jewels involved or something, and that would have been a good place for the Claw character. And that's always, all the time when I think about it, that's where I remember that character being at. But it's not at all, yeah, it's not good. And he's actually, Angus Scrimm, he was in Phantasm as the tall man. Excellent actor, has a really good, you know, pedigree of horror films and all that behind him, but they make no, you know, no real fanfare. He's just got the basic scene and then the end of the movie, and then, you know, even that is, you know, poorly done on his part, or maybe not poorly done, maybe that's what they wanted from him, but hey, who knows? It could have been a lot more with the whole, that whole thing that made a lot more sense or been more entertaining. They just went the, you know, the opposite way.
Mm-hmm. Now, if Deadfall was released today, it had exactly the same scenes, just like with modern equipment, like better camera quality, better that stuff. Do you think it would be better received or worse received? Like, do you think, how would the reception change if it was released today?
It would be a direct to streaming, direct to Redbox DVD type of movie. I don't think anyone would see it. But then again, I don't know how many people saw it to begin with, because it was not, you know, it didn't do very well. So,
yeah.
In terms of the overall audience, I think more people would probably end up seeing it now because it would be free at home somewhere. As far as it being received, it would be one of many crazy Nicolas Cage movies that he makes, and you just sort of brush it under the rug with the rest of them.
Yeah. I think that's about right. So, finally, what would you give this movie rating on a scale from 10, and what would you give Nicolas Cage's performance in this on a scale 1 to 10?
The movie itself has got to be like a 2. If you like bad movies and you like nonsensical over-the-top movies, then it's going to be a 10. Because it's definitely over-the-top, overly nonsensical. Nicolas Cage's performance, I'm going to give him at least a 9, because as bad as the movie is, he is the saving grace of the movie. You don't remember a whole lot else about it, but you remember the crazy nonsense you see from him. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a 93 movie, I think, is when I first saw it. And here we are, 2020, and I'm still thinking about it, and I still enjoy it. So Nicolas Cage, let's give him a 9 or 10 acting-wise. He did great, does crazy nonsense, but, you know, few people can do crazy like him. And, yeah, I think he did great. The movie itself, fun, not good for plot, but if you like nonsense movies, it's worth, you know, an hour and a half of your time.
Yeah, I think that is I think that's a fair rating.
And the other thing, if you like crime movies, I mean, again, the story itself is very good. It's a good crime movie. Not good execution, and probably, I'd say, bad editing to make the story screwed up itself or the plot, but, you know, the story itself, it's a good crime movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to, you know, at least give it, you know, give it its dues for that.
All right, well, Anthony, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Where can people find you if they want to know more about you?
I am the vocalist for a death metal band called Vorzug. You can get us at vorzug.info, vorzug.info. I also own the record label Apollyon Entertainment, Apollyon Music. And, you know, I'm on Facebook. I enjoy conversation. So anyone wants to hit me up and talk horrible movies, that's fine too.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And
thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
If you ever want to invite Michael Biehn onto this, I wouldn't say no.
I will send his wife an email today, and I will tell him all about this, and I'm sure they will get a kick out of it.
Nice. Yeah, again, thank you so much, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, you as well.
And that's it for this episode of Into the Cage. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, please give some support to my guests. They're so kind enough to appear on this podcast in the first place. And, you know, share this with your friends and families if you think they'll enjoy it. Yeah, thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful day.